Hi, and welcome to Heart, a Kingdom Hearts podcast, where I, Austin, explain the Kingdom Hearts series to my friends.
Hello, howdy, hi, it's Cronus. It's been so long. I'm back. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Darylise. I'm a friend. It's nice to be here. I did awkwardly peace sign at that, so that's good.
Hi, Darylise.
Hi. And I'm Riley. I have awoken from my slumber. I've been pretty much asleep since yesterday, almost 24 hours straight. So,
hi, Riley.
It's a definite vibe.
That's how the bun got like this.
The bun?
It's immaculate. It looks so good.
Thank you. It's the lighting, I'm sure of it.
Reaching new heights.
Kind of reminded me of.
Oh, yeah, she had some serious bun energy. I need a haircut.
She had a serious bump energy. She had that bump going for ever.
Yeah.
A bump it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the little bumps that was like in like
2007.
Was that like 2007, 2008 range?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember because I
had a classmate.
I would be like, at home watching the commercials, like, bump it.
Yeah, like, she had the biggest bump I have ever seen. I swear to God.
That's true.
She was so impressive. Nice. So nice, but I couldn't get past the bump.
I gotta be real honest right now to any bump lovers out there. It's not a good look on anybody. I've never seen it look good on anyone. You're just fooling yourself. Yeah. Welcome back. The heart to heart.
Welcome back to heart to heart. Take out that fucking bump it.
If you wear a bump it, just quit now. Quit listening to the pod. Quit bumping it.
Valid. Yep.
So, yeah, we're coming back from a summer vacation. Looks like our summer vacation's over, as the Roxas says. And our whole setup's a little bit different now. I have gone through all of Dream Drop Distance and made a PowerPoint to kind of guide the whole thing to make it more visually entertaining for us at the time. And it also is something I can release at the same time as the podcast on our Discord as a little extra bonus content, so to speak. Nothing super fancy or professional, but it's fun.
We love fun bonus content.
But there might be more referring to visuals than there has been in the past. And hopefully it helps, you know, keep the energy in flow and feels going.
Amphelios.
Traditionally, I would, then ask, do you guys remember what happened last week? But that was months ago, so.
Oh, God.
Or a lion.
By no means do I expect you to remember. Instead, I've created the first part of the slideshow being a recap for the whole first half of this game.
Can I give it a go?
Go for it.
Okay, so Dream Drop Distance is Kingdom Hearts Pokemon.
Yep.
There's a gay god, Tamaki, from Oron High School Host Club.
Joshua, yep. But yeah.
It's Tamaki.
Yeah. And you're playing as, like, dream versions of Sora and Riku.
You're eating nightmares, I think.
Kinda.
Did you guys study?
No.
No.
Oh, cool, me either. That's why we're on the same page.
That's all I remember. That's my Riku.
There was one of the little Pokemons I didn't trust. I don't remember why or who it was, but I didn't trust them.
I do.
It was the raccoon one.
It's the Tanuki looking one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember. The vibes, man.
So, I'm still saving it for when we get to the end of the game, but with this new style, it does make a lot more sense for me to be able to go through every single Dream Eater and let you guys talk about your opinions on them. So,
for real?
It's not done yet. And we aren't going to do that today. But when we get to the end of this game, we will go through every single Dream Eater, and you guys can talk about each of them and your opinions.
We need to come up with a scale, like a ranking system, and criteria for that ranking system.
Mm-hmm. I like to go off of vibes.
Vibes will be a big part of the
vibes. System, like, I'm sure. Would I trust you with my credit card, or would I not even look at you on the street, you know?
Would I go to coffee with you and enjoy pancakes? And I don't like pancakes.
Right.
So it's all a matter of how it goes. The ranking system is basically going to be like, would I trust you with my credit card? Would I go eat pancakes with you? Do I feel safe in your arms?
Would I dream of you? Like,
would I dream of you? Yeah.
That's a good one. Would I pick you up and give you a ride to a sketchy meth den? Or would I call the cops for getting on my parking? Hey, wait. Or would I call the cops because you stepped foot on my parking lot at work? Those are also. That's how I would. That's my scale. I don't know.
That's how Riley scales her meth heads.
Mm-hmm. Do they feel like a conservative or a liberal or an anarchist? Like, we have to figure out their political affiliations, where they stand on globalized healthcare. You know, the ranking system's important.
What we need to do is we need to get that that political scale thing and then put their little dot.
Yes!
I really think it would be good.
For anyone new listening, we bring up a lot of political things in jest, but we're really, really stressed.
Always.
I want you to know I've been on basically a fucking scavenger hunt for like the entire intro here.
Four?
Old pics of her bump. I need Cronus to understand that this shit gave her another foot of height.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, literally.
My favorite thing in middle school was when you saw people who had those, like, those bun makers, and their hair wouldn't go all the way around it, so you'd just be staring at a little, like, foam donut in their hair, and you're just like, wow, babes, you got some thin-ass hair.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah, Austin was crazy about those bun foam things.
He didn't even have long enough hair then. He just, like, pinned it to the little short hairs he had.
Yeah.
True. Facts.
He didn't listen, so. Ah! Found a picture of me in the wild. I'm not looking for pictures of me. I want some rando person's Facebook from high school.
A semi-brief recap of Dream Drop Distance. Sora and Riku were sent on a test called the Mark of Mastery exam by Master Yen Sid. We saw a presumably more traditional Mark of Mastery exam at the beginning of Birth by Sleep, where Terra and Aqua fought some floating balls and then sparred. Sora and Riku's exam is a bit more complicated due to the state of the world, aka Xehanort's been fucking around. They have to gain an ability called the Power of Waking. To get this power, they're sent back in time to ride Destiny Islands as it fell to darkness at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 1. This is because several worlds that fell to darkness before and during Kingdom Hearts 1 never fully returned. They physically did, but their hearts, because remember, worlds have hearts in Kingdom Hearts, are still asleep. So Sora and Riku ride Destiny Islands fall to darkness so that they can end up in its dream, and then hop from one sleeping world to another, until they've unlocked 7 sleeping keyholes, which in turn should wake those worlds, and this process should lead them to gaining the power of waking. A brief lore aside, we know of several realms. The Realm of Light, that's where most of the places we see in the games are, your regular-ass worlds, Olympus Coliseum, Agrabah. the Realm of Darkness, where Heartless come from. That's the Dark Margin, which is that beach that we keep seeing in the Realm of Darkness. And the Realm Between, where Traverse Town, Twilight Town, and the World That Never Was, all of them exist in the Realm Between. While the Sleeping Worlds, they dwell in yet another realm, the Realm of Sleep, which is fully separate from all the others, but of course touches them because people sleep, and those worlds can be also in that realm of sleep. It's weird. It's complicated because you can be in multiple realms at once. Sora and Riku successfully seal the sleeping keyhole in Destiny Islands. Note, we see that as they do, they're watched by the brown cloaked figure from Kingdom Hearts 1, which we know is Ansem, Seeker of Darkness, before he possesses Riku. They then make their way to Traverse Town, where they run into characters from The World Ends With You, including Beat, the "This is stale, yo" guy, and our homosexual deity, Joshua. But more importantly, they also have their first run-in with young Xehanort. When they awake in Traverse Town, they're in different outfits without really knowing why. Also, they were together on Destiny Islands, but are apart in Traverse Town. Through conversations with Joshua, they discover that there are two versions of Dream Traverse Town. Sora is in one, Riku in the other. In Traverse Town, they also learn about the natural threats in Dream Worlds, Dream Eaters. There are two versions of Dream Eaters: spirits, our Pokemon, and nightmares, our enemies.
Wait, I have a question.
Hmm?
So Riku was dropped into, like, the darker one, right?
It's the same. The coloring of the PowerPoint doesn't really reflect that.
But Riku's dealing with nightmares more, right?
They're both fighting them all the time. Like, that's the only... There's a few Disney enemies, and later we'll see a few, like, more Kingdom Heartsy enemies. But generally, every enemy you fight in the whole game is a nightmare.
I was just wondering, because they're really not fair to Riku in this game series. They really said, we're coding you as the one that's going to deal with the worst shit because you're not as good as your friend.
This game really addresses that, and addresses Riku's insecurities with that fact.
Oh. I'm Team Riku.
Same. One of, if not my favorite character. Notably, when Riku runs into young Xehanort, they have the following exchange. Since this is the first time we're running into it, I have dialogue on the screen, and I wanted to see if you guys want to act it out.
Yes.
Okay, I'll be young Xehanort. Who wants to be Riku? You only have one line right now, but... Okay, Cronus is our default Riku. Riley's our default Sora.
Yes.
They established that in Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yep.
So notably, when Riku runs into young Xehanort, they have the following exchange. How did you get here?
Who are you?
Young Xehanort ignoring Riku's question. By choice or by chance? You cannot control that which you are unaware of. This wakeless sleep will be your prison to wander forever. Young Xehanort has a tendency of popping in and saying vague stuff. That makes sense to me because I know the plot of the game. But without knowing the full plot of the game, it just sounds like vague nonsense.
And that's young Xehanort, I presume, in the thing?
Yep.
What a dramatic bitch. He really said, I'm going to bring the drama, young Riku.
You can't control the stuff you don't know about. Spoiler, Xehanort, young Xehanort, fuckface. You can't control anything. You're really gaslighting this poor kid.
This wakeless sleep will be your prison to wander forever. Where did you rip that off from? How long did it take you to write that little poetry while you were waiting for Riku to roll up?
He took it from Chaucer.
He was reading a YA novel while he waited for Riku to wander by.
He said, this is my moment. Don't interrupt. Don't interrupt my moment, Riku. This is my moment. I've been waiting.
He sits there He sits there and he's like, what else can I say that is going to make me sound like some weird villain in Vampire Diaries?
Which Vampire Diaries villain is he? I feel like he's Silas.
Oh, 100% he's Silas. No joke.
Right down to looking like one of the protagonists sometimes.
Yep. Sometimes. Silas is a doppelganger of...
Listen, I don't consider Stefan a protagonist most of the time.
It's fucking valid, though.
Okay. Glad we had this Vampire Diaries moment.
Yeah. I hate that show.
So terrible.
It's so bad.
So, after fighting a large nightmare, each of them in their own version of Traverse Town, they each seal a sleeping keyhole and move on to the next sleeping world. The next sleeping world they visit is La Cité des Cloches, which is the French... I don't know how to speak French, so I'm not going to pretend. It's the City of Bells in French. A.K.A. The Hunchback of Notre Dame world. Here, Sora and Riku's stories are mostly the same, but they go to different locations and see slightly different parts and versions of events. Both help Quasimodo, Esmeralda, and Phoebus against both Nightmares and Frollo. And they do say the G-slur a lot in this world, and it's unfortunate. Sora is pretty disturbed by the concept of Frollo keeping Quasimodo locked in Notre Dame. Between that and the emotional abuse, Sora believes that Quasi has been living in a physical and emotional prison. After defeating a boss gargoyle nightmare, Sora reflects on this when he's confronted by young Xehanort.
I wasn't ready for my debut.
I'm sorry.
Like, who is Sora? Like, I need to get in Sora's head again. You're stupid! All that time, Quasimodo let himself be trapped inside the nightmares Frollo gave him.
Hypocrite. You are the one who has made your heart a prison.
What are you talking about?
Even if you are not the prisoner. And while young Xehanort says that last line, you can see like a ghostly version of Vanitas next to him. Sora then goes on to seal his keyhole after his taunting from the bad guys.
By the baddies. Just kidding.
Riku, upon meeting Quasimodo, has a very impactful conversation with Quasi. Quasi is describing himself looking like a monster and saying that's why Frollo helps protect him from the outside world. Darylis, would you like to play Quasimodo?
Sure.
Sorry.
That's what Frollo told you? Trust me, looks can be deceiving. A good friend sees you for who you are, no matter what face you wear. You should go out there. Find some friends who understand you.
Oh no, my master forbids it. I'm not to step foot outside.
Are you sure that's what's stopping you? Because I think something else is holding you back. Ask your heart, Quasimodo. Wish I could take my own advice.
Yeah.
In the closet, I see.
That wish I could take my own advice, Quasi, there's a bit of a gap between him saying that last thing to Quasimodo. Quasimodo's like, yeah, and leaves. And then when Riku's alone, it's a much sadder, like, I wish I could take my own advice.
All right, well, here, give me a minute. I'll do it right. So, ask your heart, Quasimodo. Wish I could take my own advice.
Meanwhile, Quasimodo's like, I may be trapped in this bell tower, but you're trapped in the closet, my dude.
But this scene's super impactful to me because Riku literally spent a year looking like Ansem, Seeker of Darkness, who he regards as a monster. So he felt this himself. And then the moment that those that were closest to him saw him, Kairi and Sora, they instantly knew it was him. But the last line still demonstrates that Riku is still struggling with his self-worth due to that past, and he may still see himself as the monster. And that's why Riku's story is just so much deeper than Sora's.
Sora is Stefan. No, just kidding.
Eventually, Riku has a confrontation with young Xehanort and Ansem, Seeker of Darkness. Who would like to be a young Xehanort, I suppose?
I will.
Yeah, me.
Darylise will.
Or Riley can.
Darylise has got it.
Nah! Okay.
Hey, Riku?
Ansem, why are you here?
Your best friend is never far.
So sad. The cost of yielding to darkness. Ansem's referring to Frollo dying after being consumed by darkness. That happened, but it was kind of unimportant to the actual plot.
You could write a book about that.
But I embrace the darkness. Unless you hurry up and learn to do the same, your story will end up just like his. Again, referring to Frollo.
I walk the road to dawn.
Still afraid of the dark, I see.
The two, you know, they antagonize him, and then they leave. Riku defeats a boss and seals his keyhole. There's a lot of that in this game where they, bad guys that we know, show up, say cryptic shit, and then leave.
What the fuck?
This is the game of bullying Riku. That's what I...
Yeah.
Does he get into therapy? Because he's been bullied a lot.
He needs it, still. Mm. He has a miniature...
Kingdom Hearts 1. Riku is girl boss, gaslit, and abused. And then the rest of the time is people fucking bullying him for the trauma he experienced during the first one. Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
I gotta be super real. Not to bring another non-relevant story into this, but literally every time we have a Sora Riku thing, I really just think about Naruto. This is just Naruto and Sasuke in a Disney format.
Oh, yeah.
Sasuke! That's all I had to say.
Yeah. My commentary.
Yeah, Riku beats up a boss, steals the keyhole, and goes on to the next world. The next sleeping world they visit is Prankster's Paradise, where they run into Jiminy Cricket and Pinocchio. However, now's a good time to mention that since they're in the dream of a world that these... since they are in the dream of the world that these characters come from, and they only met Jiminy and Pinocchio after those characters left this world, the versions of them in the dream do not know Sora and Riku.
Okay.
So this is the first world where Sora and Riku's stories in the worlds really diverge. Sora's at the carnival that the boys get turned into donkeys at in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to help Jiminy Cricket rescue Pinocchio. And at some point in Sora's story, he's confronted by young Xehanort and Xemnas. Xemnas has a line which is very fucked up, which is a very fucked up way to reference Shion. My, my. A hollow puppet that's managed to grow a heart. Just imagine that. Mm-hmm. Other than this minor taunting, the two antagonists basically pop in for no real reason, if I'm honest. Sora goes on to save Monstro from an icy crab nightmare before sealing his sleeping keyhole. This is the icy crab nightmare.
Wow.
Oh.
Monstro has a keyhole?
Prankster's Paradise does, and it happens to be... Well, he doesn't go in... Sora doesn't go inside Monstro. Sora is outside Monstro and kind of working with Monstro.
Well, no, but it's, I guess it's the way it's worded, but it's Sora goes on to save Monstro from an icy crab nightmare before sealing his sleeping keyhole. And so to me, that meant that Monstro had a keyhole in him. And I was going to ask if it was his blowhole.
Sorry, no. Sora, his is Sora. I apologize.
Oh, Sora has a blowhole. Got it.
Yeah. The sleeping keyhole in this Sora's version of this world, because they're always in slightly different versions of the world.
I'm now only going to call him Sarah, too.
Sarah's blowhole.
Sounds like a really shitty, like, whale mermaid YA novel title.
Ooh.
She falls in love with a pirate.
Cover art.
Could be worse. It could be a shitty whale mermaid erotic novel.
You know,
ooh, I need
the title
cover
would
that.
Lead you to believe that, but it's mostly about her overcoming her body insecurities. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Riku, on the other hand, is inside Monstro, trying to help find Pinocchio for Geppetto after Pinocchio ran off deeper into the whale with somebody in a black coat. When Riku eventually finds them, he discovers that the person in the black coat appears to be a younger version of himself. While it does reflect Riku's own actions in Kingdom Hearts 1, we know this isn't a dream version of him, because the entire dream is set before that happened in Kingdom Hearts 1. Riku is, of course, very affected by this, saying, "That was my dark side. I gave in to the darkness once, and ever since, it's chased me around in one form or another. The Seeker of Darkness who stole my body, a puppet replica of the shadows in my heart, and now I'm facing me." And while this is really melodramatic, it is really interesting to have Riku as a playable character who is really struggling with his past and his self-worth because of it. Anyway, Riku goes deep into Monstro's belly to fight off indigestion, a fire crab nightmare, before sealing his sleeping keyhole and moving on to the next sleeping world.
That's a fire crab? It looks like a mantis shrimp.
It does, but all nightmares are kind of rainbowy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot more fire attacks, and he's literally in Monstro's stomach. And then there was the ice crab outside that Sora fought.
Mm-hmm.
That froze Monstro in a big ball of ice.
You know, all the nightmares remind me, I can't remember the name of the spirit animals in Coco. What are they called?
Those are like actual folklore.
Yeah, they're actual lore. But that's what all the nightmares remind me of.
I've never seen Coco.
The Alebrijes. Something like that.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what they look like to me.
Yeah, they're spirit guides.
Here, I'll send you one, Austin, so you can see what we mean.
Okay.
The ants, like, giant leopard one was my favorite.
Yes.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts has a lot of inspirations. You can see some, like, Christian biblical inspirations. You can see Latin inspirations, Greek inspirations. So it's possible that they were inspired by that.
Yeah, this actually, they're still kind of around, I think, in Mexican folklore, but they're originally Aztec.
Yeah. This is the great grandma's.
God, it's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Coco is such a good movie.
So good. Austin, I think you'd really like it.
I'm sure.
I know you're not like super into Disney, but I think you would really, really appreciate Coco.
It's not that I dislike Disney movies. I'm just bad at watching them. Like, I just don't watch them. I did recently watch Encanto, though, and that was good. I'm sure I'd like Coco.
So good! Sorry, I yelled that really loud and you could hear me on Austin's mic.
In between some of the worlds that we've seen, we see Zaldin, Lexaeus, Vexen, Zexion, and Axel are all recompleted. If you don't remember, we learned in some secret movies and in a cutscene at the beginning of this game that when somebody's Heartless and Nobody are both destroyed, the original person, their somebody, is recompleted. So for the most part in the future, these characters will be referred to as Dylan, Alias, Evan, and Ienzo. But Axel will go by both Axel and Lee, depending on the situation, because that's what he does in-game. In one of these cutscenes, we see that Axel / Lee is questioning where Zigbar, Brag, and Syax, Isa, are. And that, my friends, was our recap. That's everything we had actually covered in episodes before the break.
Okay.
So now we dive in to Tron.
I'm going to say it right now. Don't like how the puffy pants look in the Tron world.
No.
They just don't work. Not with that helmet.
They make him look like a robotic chicken. Not to be confused with the Adult Swim show.
Yeah.
I do love how the Keyblade looks. And if you can change your Keyblade in here, and every Keyblade you could use has a weird version in this world. It's really cool.
I like the key. Cool. I just don't like the pants.
Yeah. So yeah, this Tron world is based off of Tron. What was it called? Tron. The one that came out in 2010 that had the Daft Punk stuff. I don't remember the name of the movie anymore.
Ooh. I thought it was Tron.
It's Tron Legacy. That's the name.
I knew that too. Damn. I should have.
Sora arrives in a world, and after recognizing the change in his outfit, he assumes he's in Space Paranoids. That was the Tron world from Kingdom Hearts 2. However, he eventually realizes that this is not the same world. Back then, Tron said that his world was basically a pirated copy of another program, and this world, the Grid, is the original program. Sora is confronted by Rinsler, who reacts as if he recognizes Sora. Sam, Korra, and Kevin see Sora from a distance, and they're interested in his weapon, so they decide to approach him and introduce themselves. I don't know if you guys have all seen Tron Legacy. Kevin is the character from the original Tron movie who got stuck in the computer. Sam is his son who comes in looking for him like 20 years later. And we'll discuss who Korra is a little bit later. In talking with Sam, Korra, and Kevin, it's revealed that Rinsler is Tron. He's had his memories interfered with by somebody called Clue. Sora and Korra depart together to infiltrate Clue's ship, but when they arrive, they are ambushed by Rinsler. Once ambushed by Rinsler, Korra prepares to attack, but Sora stops her.
Wait, Korra, let me talk to Rinsler. A little heart-to-heart.
Ba-doom.
My jaw is... A little heart-to-heart. My jaw is memory.
He's a program, Sora. Programs don't have hearts.
That's not true. Everyone in the whole wide world has a heart and a keyhole and darkness and all the hearts. The Tron I remember, he had something.
That Sora turns to face Rinsler.
Hey, you used to be called Tron, right? Clue did something to you to mess with your memory. You're a little confused, but that's okay. Always confused. Try and remember Tron.
Try and remember Tron.
That. I'm always confused, as I said.
You're good, man. Unsuccessfully, convincing him, Rinsler attacks them. Korra attempts to fight him off, but loses. Sora tries to save her before he is separated from the fight. Immediately after the fight with Rinsler, young Xehanort appears to taunt Sora and say more cryptic shit.
Ron, why?
That's what we do. Put the most precious memories in the back of our minds where they're safe. Or in your case, the most precious hearts?
Not you again.
And then Xemnas appears.
The memory and heart are tightly linked. Rub a few memories together and you get a spark of emotion, a feeling. But in a digital world, memory does not work like that. Nothing is ever felt. You can hold 1,000, 1,000,000 times the information, but there's still no heart with which to parse it. Once, my master Ansem found an old system and made a copy of its master control program, and used it to serve his own ends. This is the original data of that system. Here, data can be copied. Memory can be changed and easily manipulated. Tron is a digital entity, so why would he be any different? He obeys the rules of this world. Sora, what about you?
Me?
Your heart, your memories, your data, and your dreams. The bits and bytes that have made up your life so far. Can you say for sure they're not just copies of someone else's?
A little too meta here.
Yeah.
Yes? My memories and feelings belong to me. You know?
You had better check. Make certain the box's contents match what's on the label, since you have been chosen.
And then Xemnas leaves.
Chosen for what?
You think this is the realm of dreams, but you are mistaken. Data does not dream, cannot dream. This world is real. You haven't the slightest idea where you are, that you have already wandered off the path.
What do you mean?
And then leaves.
Yeah, young Zaynard laughs at Sora being confused by everything they say, and then leaves without answering any questions, because, of course, nobody answers questions at Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, I don't want to relate to a bad guy here, but I also am amused when I know things people don't.
Oh my god.
That's valid, actually.
Can't relate.
Yeah, because you don't know shit.
Oh my god. I'm indefinitely Sora going, huh?
It's not that Riley doesn't know things. It's that Riley...
doesn't retain them?
Riley... doesn't, well, even when Riley knows something that you don't, it's really easy to get the information from them, and then they promptly forget.
Wow. Let it be known to the world, don't ever, or definitely take me as the hostage if you need information. Just stare at me long enough and I'll start talking out of anxiety.
The facts.
Yeah, no, really.
Don't actually. Sounds terrible.
Sora suddenly finds himself in the game grid. A crowd cheers as a robotic voice announces Combatant 13 versus Rinsler. Just then, Clue and Rinsler enter the game grid. Clue offers to turn Rinsler back to Tron if Sora gives him the Keyblade. Sora refuses and is forced to fight Rinsler. Korra appears overhead and calls down to Sora, explaining that she thinks Sora was getting through to Tron before, and it bought her enough time to escape after they were separated. She encourages him that he can get through to Tron, but also that beating the shit out of him will help. Because this is a video game, so we fight Rinsler. After the fight, Sora does some computer shit that he doesn't even understand with the Keyblade to try and turn Tron to normal. Right after doing this, Sora is ambushed by Clue, and Rinsler leaps up and defends Sora, falling somewhere far below as a result. Him and Sora do try and reach out and grab each other as he's falling, but they fail. Clue is upset that he lost his toy and chases after Rinsler rather than fight Sora. Sora then reflects on the things said to him by young Xehanort and Xemnas, as well as the Tron situation, determining he needs to be like Tron. Maybe we're walking the wrong path, but our hearts will lead us back to the truth. Sora then seals a sleeping keyhole and departs.
Wait, Sora sees Tron fall, sees that Clue goes after him, and goes, you know what, this is a good moment for some self-reflection. I'm gonna do my shit and leave. Fuck it. I need to be like Tron. Fall where the pieces fall. Excuse me?
Yeah. This game has weird pacing.
Okay.
Specifically with the Disney worlds. It has weird other stuff with the not Disney worlds, but with the Disney worlds, it's got some weird pacing sometimes, like this, where the end of the world, it's just like, it cuts, some amount of time seems to have passed, and the character is reflecting on what's happened.
Okay. I hope Tron's okay, since Sora don't give no shits anymore.
I mean, young Xehanort says otherwise, but as far as we're aware, this is a dream world, so he's probably fine.
God.
Well, Sora doesn't really care about his friends. Shown no, that.
They're all
many bald. Times.
It's true. Riku arrives in a world, and after recognizing the change in his outfit, questions if the world is special. It's also the grid, by the way. He's basically instantly captured by Clue's police force. While on the prisoner transport, he meets Sam. Riku is forced to do a light cycle race on the game grid. Eventually, he blasts through a wall of the game grid and escapes, eventually meeting back up with Sam. And then Sam explains the basic premise of the Tron Legacy movie to Riku, that his dad was stuck on a computer. He's here to come rescue him. He only has a certain amount of time to get his dad and get out. Oh, I forgot that I had a whole scene explaining this. In short, 20 years ago, when Sam was a child, his father, Kevin Flynn, disappeared. Turns out he got sucked into the computer, aka the events of the original Tron movie. Kevin then made a copy of himself to run the computer, but it was kind of a megalomaniac. It's now called Clue. Clue wants Kevin's identity disk, so Kevin has been hiding. Sam wants to free his dad. Whether this is by sneaking him out or by killing Clue, he doesn't really care. Kevin is hiding his identity disk from Clue because it is essentially a master key, and with it, Clue could get out of the game grid, out of the grid, and into the real world. As a program obsessed with order and perfection, Kevin fears Clue would destroy their world. Oh, and also, he already stole it. Whoops. That being, Clue's already stole the identity disk. Sam's main plan when meeting Riku is escape the game, escape the grid, and delete Clue to save Kevin. Riku offers to help Sam get through the portal out of the grid. And I just really like that these two sons get to bond about their bad dads.
Bad dad.
Bad dad club.
Bad dad club.
Oh.
Riku helps Sam get to Kevin and an unconscious Korra. The group begin to make their way towards the portal, and on the way, Kevin is looking at Korra's code, trying to make sure she's okay, and then explains to Sam and Riku that she is something called an ISO, a spontaneously evolved program, as in, not written by a human, essentially a digital life. He also explains that Korra is the last ISO, as Clue's been hunting them all down. Their path gets diverted by Clue's guards, and a then freshly reawoken Korra gets herself captured to cause a distraction. Sam and Riku run off to rescue her and get Kevin's disc back from Clue. Being main characters, they succeed in both goals and make an escape. Heading towards the portal, it is here that they are cut off by Clue, who summons a praying mantis-themed Dream Eater boss.
Beautiful.
Clue calls out to Kevin and says, "I created the perfect system!" Kevin responds, "The thing about perfection is that it's unknowable. It's impossible. But it's also right in front of us all the time. You wouldn't know that, because I didn't when I created you. I'm sorry, Clue. I'm sorry." Kevin offers a hug to Clue, but Clue kicks him out of the way. Sam charges in retaliation, but is thrown to the side. They get separated in such a way that Clue is between Kevin and the others. And the others are between Clue and the portal. Clue approaches Kevin and tries to steal the identity disk again, before realizing that Korra and Kevin switched disks ahead of time. In the end, Sam and Korra escape through the portal, Kevin sacrificing himself for them to be able to make their escape. Riku reflects on what he has experienced and what is still ahead. "These gates that connect worlds, maybe when we pass through them, we're challenged and changed. And it's not over. There are more trials ahead we'll have to overcome. But we'll be ready, Sora." Riku then seals the sleeping keyhole and leaves. Which, this one, I understand a bit more why he just, like, lets weird shit happen and then reflects, because that is just the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the Rinsler falling scene in the movie. Maybe that is the last time you see Rinsler. So maybe Sora's also sort of made sense, but I don't know. This movie was also pretty new when this game came out, because this game came out late 2012, early 2013, and the movie came out in, like, late 2010, I think.
Okay. I
also want to say that Riku's Keyblade's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty.
Wait to dawn.
I don't like his puffy pants either, but they're not as, like, obvious as Sora's.
Yeah.
They look like he got some in his pocket. Now.
Back in Radiant Garden with our recently repeopled people, Axel, Alias, and Ienzo are discussing the situation. They say Dylan and Evan are conscious again, but are still out of it, so they're resting. They question why they still haven't found Issa or Brig. They discuss possibilities for a while before Axel says, "Forget it, I'll find him myself." When questioned on how he intends to do that, he responds more to himself than to the question. Why do I always get stuck with the icky jobs? As he says this, the camera focuses on the partially erased words "Door to Darkness" on the wall, implying he will once again be using the corridors of darkness to traverse and go search possible worlds. After the grid, Sora finds himself back in Traverse Town, where the homosexual deity, Joshua, greets him and explains that Riku is here too in his version of Traverse Town. Joshua explains that though the Tui kids have swapped worlds enough to be with their partners, they aren't out of the woods yet. They are being pitted against a powerful Dream Eater that can create more of itself. So, Joshua asks Sora and Riku for their help in defeating it. The pair, of course, agree to help. Sora runs into Neku and Shiki, fighting the summoned hordes of the Spelican. Neku, trying to keep up with the Edgelord persona, at first refuses his help, but eventually he relents. After chasing away the Spelican, Joshua appears and explains that it ran away to Riku's version of the world. He proposes a plan where they trap it in both worlds so that they can finally defeat it. While Sora and Shiki run ahead to get ready on the ambush, Neku hangs back for a moment to talk to our homosexual deity. Who would like to be Neku, and who would like to be our homosexual deity?
What do you feel is more of these characters, Austin?
Yeah, Austin, tell us.
I kind of feel like Cronus would be a good Neku. Neku's kind of edgy, and kind of like, he definitely is putting on a front of being edgy.
Ew.
I'm not saying that you do that. I think that you could act that, though.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure who, out of Darylise and Riley, who would rather play a small homosexual man who, every sentence, it sounds like he's flirting.
Please. Riley's. Riley.
Riley's face.
I think Riley could do it.
You're muted.
While I was muted, I was trying to say, yes, Riley's face is absolutely a small homosexual man flirting.
Okay, Riley, so every line, just say it as if you're flirting.
Okay, are we ready?
And action.
Joshua.
Yes, Neku.
Tell me, are we really going to make it home?
But Neku, I thought you couldn't afford to lose. Give up on yourself and you'd give up on the world.
Right. So I'll see you there then.
Me?
Yeah. You're my friend. It's your home too.
Maybe it's that you're turning into Sora. Thanks.
That was a Cronus inclusion for people who don't know.
Sometime after making it to the ambush location, the Spelican pops back into this world, Riku having chased it away from the same location in his version of the world. It instantly summons a bunch of Dream Eaters that Neku and Shiki and maybe Joshua run off to handle, while Sora fights some previous Dream Eater bosses that it has now summoned. After all the bosses are defeated, the Spelican flies through a sleeping keyhole and into another world. Sora offers to go after it for them, knowing that they can't just hop between worlds like he can. Neku and Shiki thank Sora and say that he should come visit them in their world sometime, saying the line, "See you in Shibuya," which is a very important line in Kingdom Hearts fan communities because we assume we will go to their world at some point. And a note, you know, in real life Tokyo Shibuya, there's a building that has 109 at the top. A defining characteristic of the Shibuya from their world is that that building is 104 instead of 109. It might seem like I'm pointing this out for no reason, but trust me, way down the line, it'll be important.
Okay.
In Riku's version of Traverse Town, he's also greeted by Joshua and given the same info as Sora. In this conversation, Joshua explains to Riku that he no longer thinks the two Traverse Towns are actually parallel worlds because time flows differently in both. Riku nonchalantly says, "That's true of any two worlds. Their home world would be flowing on a different time axis, too." This is how we officially learn that time flows differently in every world. I just think it's really funny that Riku just drops the laws of, like, the physics of their universe so casually on us when we've never heard it before. And so you'll, now that we've hit there, You'll frequently hear me refer to time axes in an exasperated tone. It adds so much more confusion to me. It makes sense. Like, different worlds would be on different flows. But how do we then measure how long was Sora asleep for? Was that in just Destiny Island's time or another world's time? Where are we measuring from? What's the standard time zone?
The great thing about time, Austin, is that time itself as a concept is created by humans. It does not exist naturally. So you can make whatever time in this fictional video game that you want.
But the problem is, the person who made this fictional video game made different worlds experience different time. And doesn't explain it.
I mean, people in this world are experiencing different time all of the time.
But I mean, a minute here is a second there.
It just sounds means familiar. That whoever the person who wrote the story for this doesn't have to worry about making time line up for Riku and Sora.
I know.
Makes it easier writing-wise.
It does. It's just... It complicates the one thing it really complicates is, when Sora comes back to another world, and it's been... After Kingdom Hearts 2, having that definitive, it's been a year since the end of Chain of Memories. From that point on in the series, we never get definitive times of anything, so we have no clue how old anybody is or anything. So it gets hard to track stuff, is the bigger issue with it.
Okay.
That's fair. By the end of Kingdom Hearts 3, I don't know, has it been a year since Kingdom Hearts 2 for Sora? Has it been a couple months? I have no way of knowing. Anyway, during the Laws of Nature talk, Joshua says that it's the same world, and it's the same world imagined by two different people. And he thus realizes that he's in a dream. He realizes that if this is the case, it means that nothing going on with him or his friends matters, but that it might be a clue for Sora and Riku. So they agree to work together against the spell again. So then Riku runs up ahead to meet up with Beat and Rhyme. I also just find it hilarious that Joshua knows Sora's not going to understand any of this. Let me talk with the intellectual of the group. And with Sora, I'll just say, help us. And he's right.
I'm stuck on the Spellikin.
I love the Spellikin.
Oh, we'll be dealing with the Spellikin for a while. In a scene I find too goofy not to just show you in its entirety, Riku, Beat, and Rhyme talk for a long time about unrelated stuff right in front of the Spellikin until it gets so annoyed that it is being ignored that it summons a bunch of Dream Eaters and flies away.
Beat! About time, yo! Beat!
About time, yo!
What happened to your Dream Eaters? Don't need them when I've got my game partner, and I don't need you!
Ah, here we go again. 5 seconds ago, it was, where's Riku? And now the act?
Whoa! Don't tell him that.
It's so nice to meet you. I'm Rhyme. Riku, right? Sorry, my partner's acting like a doofus.
I am not! You always gotta go around and garnish my reputation!
Since when? You burned that bridge all by yourself. Nobody raises his reputation by lowering others.
Yo, Riku, you gonna sit there and let her get in my grill?
Sorry, it's just... You two are cut from the same cloth.
I ain't made of cloth.
You made of cloth?
Beat looks and talks like a punk, but there's a heart of gold in there somewhere.
Yeah, he's come through for me, so I know what you mean.
There, see? I'm a... Rhyme? You didn't just call me a punk again.
Huh? All right, now we ruffled its feathers. Ready to do this?
Yeah! Me and Rhyme will handle things here.
I trust that little goat thing with my entire life.
Right. Oh my god!
The vibe is there. Is the vibe pancakes?
The vibe, yeah.
I would eat pancakes with that goat thing, yeah. 100%.
I love that entire scene. I really related to every single character in that scene. both the antagonist, the antagonizer, just all of it.
Fantastic.
The witness.
Yeah. The goat.
Yeah, the goat rising out from the ground.
I didn't know how to describe that scene without just showing it to you guys in its entirety like that.
I think it reminded me of the Cult of the Lamb a little bit. And I trust the Cult of the Lamb guy so much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Joshua catches up to Riku and tells him his plan to pin the Spelican between worlds. So Riku chases it to the ambush spot, and it hops over to Sora's world. Riku beat Rhyme and Joshua, say their goodbyes, and Riku hops through a keyhole onto the next world. Back in Disney Castle, if you'll recall, we've had some scenes with Mickey, Donald, and Goofy at Disney Castle. And you may recall that early in the game there was a scene where Donald, Goofy, and Mickey learned that Queen Minnie was kidnapped by Maleficent. They're confronting Maleficent about that now, and Mickey asks her what she wants. At first she says she wants Disney Castle, but Mickey calls her bluff. She then reveals that Xehanort sent her down this original path of trying to conquer the worlds the way she did in Kingdom Hearts 1. But now, she has a new plan for trying to rule all the worlds. What she wants is the data of the worlds. Mickey refuses, and just as Maleficent fires off a magic blast at him, a recognizable chakram flies through the corridor, through a corridor of darkness and blocks the magic. Maleficent and Pete decide to head out, having at least gotten confirmation that the data is somewhere in the castle. Lee enters through the corridor of darkness, and Mickey chastises him, saying that it's reckless to use darkness to travel here. But gosh, I didn't expect you to save us, Axel. Axel didn't. My name's Lee. Got it memorized? I think that's where we'll end it.
Fantastic! A return of Axel, or Lee, whatever. So good.
Axel. Yeah, in this scene, he says Lee, but there'll be other scenes where he says, like, oh, you can call me Axel, but you can call me... So he flip-flops back and forth, so Axel and Lee, I use them interchangeably.
Fair. I love that. Yay!
So, do you guys have any thoughts, comments, or questions on our return to Dream Drop Distance?
No, I think I'm good, personally.
All right, well, normally I would interrupt the outro to read the names, but we have a whole bunch of people who have joined our Discord during our hiatus. So I guess I'll hit that up front. There are links to join our Discord server in the show notes. And all of these folks have recently joined, or in the break have joined. NJ. Beardy Raptor.
Hey.
Jay.
Jay.
Ahozu Kira. Evil Eye Was.
Was what? We don't know.
President Comstock 30.
Don't trust them.
Seamont 2. It's a Raven.
And it was.
Bad Is Boy it? Dave. But spelt Weird. With some of all the vowels in that are spelt with letters.
Fantastic. No comment on that.
The youths call that late speak.
Feels Homestuck-esque.
You call that late speak. You ever think of dogs?
Not really.
Yes, all the time. All the time.
Every day.
More of a cat person.
Mr. Ajako 95? I don't know. MRAJKO 95.
Something tells me maybe you don't pronounce it that way, Austin. Something
Mr.
my immature heart.
Pronounce it Margico.
Fair enough. Crossover Lion?
Crossover of what? We don't know.
Seed?
A lion.
Or CD? CD's nuts?
Oh my god.
Sly RSD?
I think it's slurged.
Slurst.
Slurst. Wait, can I say the next one? Can I say the next one?
Of course.
Fuckboy Leo!
Uh,
Margina Luma.
Hi, Margina.
Okay. You know the vibe.
I just got that. I thought they were talking about Future Diary.
I didn't know they that's might. What...
Oh, it might be a double pun.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we've got to eat pancakes with them.
You, oh, if it's, you know, from Future Diary, you can cross me out of that. I'm not getting into that.
I just feel like they know the vibe.
Weiss underscore Belladonna.
Weiss.
I don't know how to pronounce this one, and I am very sorry.
Aeneas Nay.
Aeneas Nay.
Aeneas Nay, there we go. Crescent Dreams 3. Isubara. Wheelers. The Red Phoenix 52. And Fluffy Unicorn of the Apocalypse.
Low-key gives me Cult of the Land vibes yes. as well.
Yeah.
Is there a unicorn skin on there?
Yes.
Ooh, I haven't gotten it yet.
I have it. It's. I think you get it in the second world, I believe.
Oh, I don't think I got it. No, I did get. I did get it because I got the one with the blood, and then I was like, I'm gonna leave it because it tells a story.
Fantastic. I always choose the rougher ones or with the markings.
Me too. It feels skins, the
even if they come in without.
It feels the most cult like. I really struggle not turning them all into dogs, though, so I can get that good dog interaction.
Same.
To pet them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Except for the first dog I had, Johnny. I had to sacrifice him.
That's...
The first dog I had told me that my colt looked like crap and I needed to make decorations. And I was like, why the fuck are you here then? What I like to do is when they get really old, I kill them and then I feed them to my followers.
My followers eat grass.
For the record, if this did, any clips of this end up in the episode, they're talking about a game, not our casual backyard. For all intents and purposes, but also don't show up unannounced. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Unless you want to be fed to the followers.
I'll feed you grass. You'll love it. I get a little ping that says my followers have eaten grass. They're thrilled. And I have this one asshole follower who comes up and he's like, do you want to know what would be funny? It'll be so funny. Let's feed this guy poop. Do it.
Yes. I have a follower that does that too. And I'm like, I'm going to kill you and feed you to everyone if you don't.
I did it the first time. And then he came again and was like, I don't think they got the joke. Let's do it again. I'm like, no.
Yep.
Hey everyone, Editing Austin here. I just popped in to say that after recording this episode, we determined we're actually going to move to a bi-weekly release schedule. So, this episode released on September 6th, and the next one will not release until September 21st. And for the foreseeable future, we'll hold on to that schedule. That's all from us this week. Nope, that's not how the intro and outro goes. Our intro and outro song is Dearly Reminded by Anna Ultra. You can find his Bandcamp links in the show notes. You can also find links to our Discord server in the show notes. I think that's all for us this week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, welcome to Heart to Heart.
A Kingdom Hearts podcast.
Starring Courage, the Cowardly... Wrong show.